Enter if you dare this ghastly conversation of teens fraught with despair and recent lacerations. Final girl, chase after her, don't let her get away. But first, the Slumber Podcast Massacre.
Welcome to Slumber Podcast Massacre with TNA. I know you think I'm lying, but that's Tim.
I know you think I'm lying, but that's Andy.
And this is a podcast about horror. Every week, Tim and I get together. We talk about a different movie from the horror genre, from your well-known classic down to the rare gem that won't cross against the light at the back of your video store shelf. This week, we're starting a fun little November miniseries where all the movies start with N and we're calling it the N-word.
Because it is.
It is.
Yeah.
They are.
They are. N-words.
Right. There's so many other N-words.
Right. Yeah. It's like a Sesame Street skit. Like, look at all the N-words.
And this N-word is actually a request from an old friend of ours, my high school roommate. Well, you also were, or not high school, college roommate.
Sure.
He was actually my college roommate after you dropped out of college as my roommate.
For the fifth time, yes.
That was fun. from 1984, it's Night of the Comet. All right, Tim, you're the last person on Earth. What do you do?
Oh, that's a great question. I know exactly what I'd do. I'd go to Walmart.
Okay.
Because you've got, and I mean, you know, somebody might say like, well, I prefer Target, but Walmart because the weapons.
Sure.
So you've got pharmaceuticals, you've got medical supplies, you've got clothing, you've got food, you've got weapons. You've got entertainment.
Yeah.
You have basically anything that you would need. So when it's the end of the world, that means that aside from this movie where everything electrical just keeps on functioning for no good reason, things are going to shut down. Now, we can take a clue and a hint from one of the most revered post-apocalyptic, I'm going to call it a franchise, the Mad Max franchise.
Okay.
Now, in that frame of mind, the most important thing is fuel.
Yeah.
So it's about if you don't have fuel, then it's, you know, it's basically admitting, like, does anybody want to go back to covered wagons, let alone gruel being on the menu every day? Like, it's going to take us 3 days to get from Northwest Indiana.
I like to think
Chicago.
Of, like, some Amish Mad Maxer, but like cruising through the desert and there's one guy just playing an acoustic guitar on it.
Yes. The Amish would rule the post-apocalyptic.
Yeah, they're like, we've been training for this our whole life.
They're like, it's fucking Tuesday. What's the difference? So, but no, for me, I want, yeah, and you know what's funny? I'll tell you what I really, really want, and it doesn't make any sense. I want a crossbow.
What do you mean it doesn't make any sense?
It feels
the coolest weapon.
It really is.
What Chewbacca uses.
Yeah. Oh, he does.
It's a laser crossbow, however that works. Yeah, I don't know.
We'll get there. Sure. But yeah, I want a crossbow and I want...
do you know what the ammo for a crossbow is called? It's not arrows.
It's not.
No.
What is it?
Bolts.
Bolts.
Yeah.
That's even cooler.
I'm sure probably someone's like, you can put arrows in it. But they're referred to as bolts.
Broken Bolts with John Travolta and Christian Slater.
Ooh, damn.
Yes. Yes. That's the only way we can get this thing off the ground, guys. Yeah. I want a crossbow. I mean, you got everything. You got batteries. You got flashlights. You really have to think about it because it's in that moment that every person individually is going to have to take stock of what their needs are. Like, do you wear contacts?
Yeah.
Do you wear glasses? Do you have, maybe you wear glasses, but all you have is contacts and you don't have a spare pair of glasses. And you wish that you did because sometimes the contacts just burn your eyes and you just want to take them out at the end of the night, but you can't.
Right.
I'm not speaking from experience, but yeah, that's the thing you got to figure. Like, do I have asthma? Do I take medication? Like, And the kind of shitty part about it is that they don't have an endless supply there.
Yeah.
But it is Walmart, so they probably have a lot of what you want. I'm going there, and I'm getting testosterone.
Uh-huh.
I'm getting Ritalin. I'm getting some supplements.
Some sups. Sure.
And so once I have that like in my bag, I'm feeling pretty good. Like it's probably going to make me feel so good that I have my pharmaceuticals that I'm going to like forget about things like a flashlight. But I know that I need those too, but they have tents, they have everything. So yes, if I'm the last person to answer your question, I'm going shopping. That's exactly, I'm going looting.
Yeah.
And well, it's not even really looting anymore, is it?
Well, no. I mean, there are no laws.
No.
Who's going to enforce a law?
Right. The guy with the crossbow. So, yeah, I'm going shopping. Okay, let me take
you
that.
You wouldn't just like drive a car fast down the highway well, first?
Let me rewind. I would save my family. I should probably put
no,
that
you
out
can't.
There.
You're the yeah. last one.
Oh, the last one.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Sorry, guys. I love you. I miss you. No, I would. Yeah. The last guy. Yes. Shopping first, vehicle next. And it would have to be, I guess at that point, you could kind of have your choice of whatever you wanted to drive. So if what you're really asking is, how are you going to fill your days?
Sure. Yeah.
Because,
yeah, everyone's going to go get supplies.
We're just raised in a world where if you're the last person on Earth, of course there's an army of zombies coming to kill you as well. Right. But if that's not...
Oh, no. In this scenario, there's three zombies tops.
Three?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So I've got the crossbow. We're fine. Let's go shopping for cars. I would do that. And here's the thing. Like... I would be sad. I really like people. I like to work a room. And it would be sad to not have people to talk to anymore. But I think that I have enough enthusiasm for other things in life to try that.
Yeah.
So yeah, I would get a car. I would get a sports car. Yeah, I'd run that motherfucker down the street at 200 miles an hour because what's the worst that's going to happen? Like, my license has never been safer since the day that I got it than in that moment. So, I'm gonna fucking do that. And then I guess at some point you'd start to think about food. That's where I might struggle a little bit.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's enough like Dinty Moore. Like you can just eat that shit off a shelf.
You'd be fine
years.
For a while. Yeah. Yeah. You would, you know, canned food lasts a while.
Yeah. You'd probably like eventually there's going to come a point where you're like, I've got the crossbow. I've driven 200 miles an hour. Might as well jack off. So that's happening. And then like once you clear your mind, you're like, OK, what is net? What's the rest of my life?
Yeah.
Now, here's it. Let me bring it down a notch. Do you go through like a Tom Hanks crisis of us? Existential crisis of self and contemplate like Tom Hanks wasn't dying on that island in what's that
Castaway.
Yeah. But he was just kind of like, I'm bored. Should I just
kill
myself?
Yeah. He's like, no one knows I'm here. Yeah. It's either do I miserably waste my days out until I die naturally, or can I just put the waiting out of the way?
Can I just say that when a dear friend of mine passed away, but we watched that movie one time at 8 o'clock in the morning. We were both off work and we were like, hey, let's just hang out. And I went upstairs and we put on Castaway. And I thought that was the hugest comedy of that year.
Oh, geez.
Because we were both feeling good. And when he finally brings himself to open one of the packages and it's a goddamn pair of ice skates, I fell out of my chair laughing, collapsed with laughter. Loved it. But no, I guess at some point that might enter your mind, but it's like if you're alive, somebody else could be alive.
Yeah. True.
So do you then just start traveling? Maybe. But that's the shitty part. Do I just stay here and wait for them, or do I go and try to find them?
Yeah.
Which is what are there? I mean, there has to be some way that math applies to that. I'm not smart enough to figure it out, but it's like, do you run a better chance of staying still or traveling to find other people?
Yeah. There was a show called The Last Man on Earth with Will Forte, and he actually, at the beginning of that, you see, like, he's gone around on billboards all over,
yeah,
and painted alive in Tucson, and then he just goes back to Tucson and hangs out.
Okay, okay, that's smart.
Yeah.
That's smart.
Good show.
I do like to read, so there would be some of that. But, you know, yeah, I guess
you don't have to make things up.
We'll fix that in post.
I get you probably get a book and be like, I'm going to take advantage of this time.
Be honest, it's a magazine. It'll be a magazine. so many more pictures. But no, that's, I guess you, here's the thing. You have to have a purpose, right?
Yeah.
So that once you have your supplies, then you have to have a purpose. And I guess that purpose would be to find another person. And so, but the other question is, we can still have a little fun with this. Let's say you do that Tucson thing. Let's say you do that I'm going to travel, I'm going to take a week, and I'm going to drive out, you know, 100, 200 miles every day, spray paint the signs on the biggest billboard I can find, go back home. Where do you go to live then? Or do you just move to a different part of the country? Some might say, let's find that warmer climate.
Right. No, I'd probably just still go to Chicago. The Marina Towers.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
That's just, yeah, at least for a year or so.
Yeah. I mean, I'd live in like two of them. I'd like bust a wall down.
Right. One can be the party one, and the other right. one can yeah, be like the is, one nice in case yeah. anybody shows up.
Yeah. Don't go in there, a vagrant. Yeah, live there. He died, but yeah, shit all over the floor. He just kind of
slops. Yeah. No, that's right. Okay, so is plumbing is toilet flushing hooked to an electric process?
I don't believe so.
So does that just keep working?
I mean, in a way. I mean, eventually because plumbing is then filtered and gotten rid of, you know, there's not like a tank accumulating all waste. But so eventually that's going to, I mean, it's going to take a long time for you to do it. I don't know about water reserves, how that technically works.
I'm only concerned, is the toilet going to keep flushing?
For a while, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then there's other toilets that should. Because
that just kind of uses gravity.
Right? Okay.
Yeah.
So we're fine. Yeah, the things that we stumble upon, yeah. We sound so dumb when this.
Yeah, and like water pressure.
Yeah.
Because when it fills, it opens a valve, and the water pressure is what fills your tank.
In just a house toilet.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, yeah, how much outside force is working on that, I'm ignorant to. I don't know.
Now, here's what you don't do. You don't go out of your way to, like, risk your life. I know you want to have fun. But you don't say to yourself, like, I'm going to go to Colorado and go downhill skiing when you run into a tree and then you lay there and end up dying at the like right. foot of a mountain.
Don't
like,
do that.
Don't risk
this
your
life. This is not your time to try bungee jumping.
Yeah, right, exactly. Right. Yeah, you get to drive really fast in hot cars. Like, yeah. Be satisfied with that.
I'd do that.
You're the crossbow guy. Like, there's enough here.
I would run stop signs. Woo!
Would you, you know what you could do? Like, I remember going to Great America with a friend, Rico Cemento, and he said, you know, like, if we stop and talk to girls, like, we can just, like, change our name. Like, we can just, like, change our name to whatever we want.
Why would,
like,
you change it from Rico Cemento?
You wouldn't. That's as good as it gets.
I'm Gary Marshall.
Yes. Famed television producer. But yeah, like, I mean, I guess you would have no reason to, like, if you met somebody. But isn't that the funny thing? You might be so nervous because you haven't seen anyone in 2 years. You just change your name and, like, don't even mean to.
Right.
And then you're like, 15 days later, you're like, remember, I know you've been calling me Bob.
Listen, yeah, I don't know why I said that.
Right. I just got to cut this shit off at the
knees. That person's like, one person in the world, and I can't even trust them.
Right. Yeah, somebody does that to you, and you're like, I haven't called you by your fake name because I'm afraid of getting it wrong.
Right, yeah. So, you know, my name is not Man, right? Right. Sorry, dude.
Yes. But no, I think that that's, yeah, you have to have a purpose. You have to keep yourself safe. You have to have a purpose, and you have to kind of keep yourself sane. Now, I know that going back to that Tom Hanks movie, he had to have somebody to talk to, and he had Wilson, the volleyball.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not 100% opposed to something like that. I think maybe you can have a dialogue with yourself without associating with a piece of sporting goods.
Yeah.
But you'd probably talk out loud a lot.
Yeah.
You'd have to.
Yeah.
You would
find something to talk to, though.
Sure.
I think anyone would do that.
And maybe some people, like a smart person, would probably try to find like long wave radio equipment to communicate with maybe like another continent.
Sure.
Because maybe everything is fine over there.
Right.
And they're like, come to France, like bring your crossbow. Like, come on, like we're having a great time over here.
Can someone come pick me up?
Yeah. And then America just becomes a theme park of other countries that want to try conquering it and taking it over. Like, just a perverted, like, you know, you have actors over there that you can rape and pillage. Like, you know, they work in. Yeah. America just becomes a theme park for conquering. So yeah, you'd want to, I guess supplies first, then contact and a purpose along the way. So that's what I would do, but it starts at Walmart.
All right. Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, is there a better store? We don't have Fetlas anymore. But
no Fetlas.
For those of you local listeners, a store that really literally had everything.
Yeah.
Would you be alone? Would you crack a couple beers sometime at night? Would you have a little fun? You'd get a little loose?
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah. I would go at Costco. They've got a $35,000 bottle of scotch. I'm going to go get that right away.
The fact that you're going to save money when you could have any bottle of scotch, it's like, I got to get to fucking Costco.
Did you not hear how much the bottle costs, though?
How much?
$35,000.
Oh, wait, $35,000. I thought you said $35.
No, $35,000.
At Costco?
Yeah. Yeah. It's probably 50 anywhere else.
Is it there on the
shelf?
Well,
I don't think it's at ours, but I've seen pictures of one in a scotch subreddit I belong to.
You know what is there, though?
TVs?
Fucking hot dogs.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Even cheaper when Did there's no one there to sell them. Did
you
hear
the story? Like, the guy that invented Costco, you know, it ended up, like, selling shares and steak and that sort of thing. Did you hear the thing about...
Oh, yeah. He's like, he said, don't touch the hot dog. Well, yeah.
He said, the quote is, if you raise the hot dog, I'll fucking kill you. It's just pretty badass, and we're all like, fuck yeah, because they're good.
They are.
Yeah, that's $35,000.
Yeah, it can't.
Is
I
it
mean,
just because it's a vat of it?
No, like, it's that a would, bottle.
A bottle.
Yeah. I mean, it can't be that. There is no way.
Is it Kirkland brand?
No, I think it's like a 50-year Macallan or something like that. But still, like, there is no way the taste of it is like 300 times better than
how could it be?
Good, yeah, the diminishing returns has to be near instant. Like, once you are paying over $100 for a bottle of alcohol, like, it's not gonna taste that much better.
That's just a room of like, it's a really cool company of some really cool execs sitting around getting high, talking about just how high they should raise the price. Right. And some dude's like, $35,000. They all started laughing and then made it $35,000.
Yeah, I thought you were joking. I did it.
Right. People are buying it, they're stealing it when the world ends, but. No, that's
I'd want to try it, and then I would take another one and just smash it.
There you go. Yeah, yes.
I would probably burn a lot of stuff. I got a little bit of a fire. Well,
you gotta do that post apocalyptic thing. You got to, even if you're not cut, you got to take a swig and then pour it on a wound.
Oh, like, yeah,
you got to do that thing. That's a survival thing. Take a swig, pour it on the wound. Yeah, no, that's fun. God, you know, all you'd really need is I don't know if you'd want one other person. A trio is nice. Because then it's like, you know, the two people can be at odds and one person can be the voice of reason.
Yeah.
You know.
Or you have someone you can pick on with the other person.
Right.
It's nice to bully someone and make them feel like they're not, even when there's only three people left, there's still a fucking hierarchy here, buddy.
There's still a little extra baggage that we could get rid of. Yeah. that's true. But you know what? This movie touches on it a little bit, but I've thought about that before. Like, what if you were, I'm going to be nice about this, birthable people.
Uh-huh.
And you were two compatible birthable people.
Okay.
And
what does birthable people, well, what are you skating around?
What I'm saying, I would say
fertile people?
I would say a man and a woman.
Okay.
There are some people out there that would say that a man is birthable if it's a transsexual person.
Okay.
Okay. So you could have, I mean, I'm trying to grow.
I got you.
Trying to make you happy. So two people that can get together and create offspring.
Sure.
Okay. But what a fucking burden though, dude. Because it's like, I mean, at some point the science is going to creep in there if you want to keep it going. You can only, well, what are you going to do? Yeah, you make another generation in hopes of maybe they meet somebody, but you can't really cross the streams.
I know, it's hard, yeah.
Yeah.
What do you do?
Right. Well,
just hopefully we hope over some generations you breed the inbreeding out of it.
Yeah, that's the thing.
I don't think that works, but
maybe. Yeah, maybe.
My second generation, they're not going to know how to have sex.
Eventually war is going to come into play. So you keep having kids, and then the real dumb ones, you just conquer them, and then you keep breeding smart people,
right?
Until you get to like an actual smart person, you know, it's going to take a while. But no, I think this is fun. I don't hope for the end of the world. I don't wish for it in any way. But I kind of feel through this discussion that we might be okay.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, 15 years down the road, maybe thing. You know, you've driven enough cars 200 miles an hour.
Put a bullet in my head.
Right. There you go. But yeah, have a little fun along the way.
Or a knife in my temple.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Whatever it takes. Yeah, maybe you start, and the thing is, maybe you just reassure yourself on the things that you don't like doing. You're like, I've never done this, and everybody used to talk about like how great that was. I'll try it, and then you try it, and you're like, fuck that.
Right.
Yeah, you're like, I'm going to do the things that I like to do. So, yeah, I think that you just hope that there is someone else around and that they're not an idiot.
Yeah.
Because isn't that the shitty thing? You've been living for 3 years and you've kind of like beat the mental part of it, and you're kind of like in your groove, and you get up and you go to bed every day and you have hope, and you're kind of living a fun life because you have these things that you do and that you've acquired and whatnot. But then you meet somebody and they're just a fucking douchebag, and you're like, God, can I go back? Can I just, you know, I mean,
I just want to tell you, then your life becomes
getting
all day
away from someone. Right. You have a new purpose.
That's kind of fun then. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. Then it's like, a game.
Chase me. Bye.
Right. Yes.
Try and find me.
Hide and go seek the world
I'm
over.
In Utah.
Yeah. Oh, that's fun.
All right. We put this off long enough.
Yeah. Let's talk about all of the same things we were just talking about.
Yeah. So, this is Night of the Comet. Recommended by someone who I now feel might hold some sort of personal vendetta against us or something. No, I of course I tease. No, this movie has like 90% on Rotten Tomatoes.
What?
Get the fuck out of here.
90?
90. None of those are from 1984 reviews, guaranteed. All right.
Not at all.
I don't want to give away how I felt about this movie yet. So let's do the Wikipedia facts, and then we'll get into it. This is Night of the Comet from 1984. It was written and directed by Tom Eberhardt. It stars Catherine Mary Stewart, Kelly Maroney, and Robert Beltran. It had a budget of $70,000. It made $14 million. Pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good. On one of the supplementary things I saw, though, like it was like a six-screen, that was the big thing, like six screens in your cinema. And in all the other movies, like Indiana Jones, Ghostbusters, like five other just tent poles. I mean, 1984 is an insane year for movies anyway. And then fucking Night of the Comet. Okay, let's do Nan some, and then we'll get into some spoilers. It's Christmas time, but everyone in L.A. is fixated on the comet that's passing by Earth for the first time in 65 million years. I also looked that up. 250,000 years is the largest comet orbit we know of. 65 million is insane. Through various circumstances, sisters Reggie and Sam each spend the night in different steel boxes. Reggie in a projection booth and Sam in their shed. And thank God they did, because the entire population was wiped out due to the comet's presence, leaving only piles of ash that would make Thanos proud. The two head over to a radio station where they meet Hector, who slept inside his steel truck the night before. The trio uses the radio station as a call for help, and their transmission is picked up by some underground scientists. And not the cool kind of underground either. I mean the kind who saw this coming and hid underground, hoping to create a serum to save humanity. The researchers find Sam and Reggie as they themselves are being attacked by a gang of rogue stock boys at a shopping mall, and they bring Reggie back to the facility with them. She soon finds out that the facility itself has been compromised by the dust, and it's only a matter of time before the researchers themselves turn into zombies, which did happen to a small handful of people. Can Reggie reunite with Sam and turn the human race around, or will their last peaceful time be the night of the comet? I took this very seriously.
Not the first Hector to fall asleep in a steel truck, but no, honestly, I'm kidding. Anyhow, yes, by the way, very well written. And
that would be the siesta of the comet.
Yes, thank you. You just made this movie sound like a lot of fun.
It kind of does, even though it's a little...
It's kooky.
I really have no words.
It's kooky, but it's fun. Here's the thing. Like, if we're just going to put this out there, sometimes there are just... the mysteries in this world of things that are really, really popular that you haven't been a part of. And this is one of those things for me with this movie, because people will talk about it like, and as I say this, I'm starting to wonder if we're venturing into that territory of people that haven't actually seen it, but heard enough people.
Oh, yeah.
Which is
why it
has 90%.
It's a cult classic. Yeah, I love that movie.
Right.
I'm starting to think cult classics suck.
Or they're just like, yeah, they're just fluff. Like it's all just fluff. But either way, people will talk about this in that exact same speech cadence of like, oh yeah, yeah, Night of the Comet. Oh yeah. kind of like, just like, yeah, that's what the Kool-Aid guy's review was as well. But like apparently you liked it. But I have heard it.
He leaned against the wall, though. Like, that's a not very ringing endorsement.
like he had to take a minute with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But, right. But he still fell through it somehow.
It's his bit.
Right. That's what he does. Yeah. That's what he does. But so I've heard about it. And the thing is like, I never really knew what people were talking about, because I figured that for as many people that like this movie, that eventually I would be like, oh, they're talking about that movie that I've at least heard about.
Yeah.
But really not one frame of this movie looked familiar to me. So it was all brand new. And it was directed by Tom Eberhardt, who actually went on to have some halfway decent credits.
Yeah.
He did Gross Anatomy. He did Captain Ron. He also did The Night Before, starring Keanu Reeves. The movie that had the tagline...
I don't remember that.
You lost your father's car, sold your prom date, and a guy named Tito wants you dead the night before. Yeah, that's literally the tagline.
Sold your prom date?
Sold your prom date. And a guy named, like, and this is so, like racist, like, the like, and a guy named Tito wants you dead. Like,
you know what he is.
Yeah, meanwhile, like, all Hispanic people are like, you mean like my cousin, like my nice cousin named Tito, who, like, wouldn't hurt anybody? But, so there was that. I did read here that Eberhardt has won 2 awards.
Oh.
It didn't specify.
No Razzies? Oh, okay.
It just said that it, not one, but 2 awards.
It just said awards?
It just said, yeah, Eberhardt has won 2 awards. I swear to God, I'm not joking. When he was writing the script, he really kind of enjoyed the idea of women being alone in an empty city. And further inspiration came from the teenage girls whom he, air quotes, interviewed for PBS.
Okay.
So he's talking to these teenage girls. He's approached them. He's discussing how they would react to a post-apocalyptic world. And most of them thought that it was like pretty exciting and adventurous, and they didn't really see a downside until Eberhardt started speaking about dating. And then they kind of withdrew a little bit. So that's where he realized that that must be the biggest problem in a post-apocalyptic
right.
world. Or at least those girls who were being quote-unquote interviewed for PBS started to feel really creepy about the interview. He pitched the script to a fledgling
what
studio.
What if I was the only one?
That's exactly what I'm picturing.
Yeah.
What if I was the last
could you imagine?
Yeah.
You'd have to, though.
Yeah, I can. Yeah. want to see my crossbow? He pitched the script to a fledgling studio, Atlantic Entertainment Group, who had surprising success with a movie called Valley Girl.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have success with something. This is Hollywood. You just kind of build on that. And they were excited to build on that momentum. And there was this quirky popularity of these sort of midnight movies that had this – that took the urban experience and I don't know. It was like everybody collectively moved into these urban areas, and then once they got there, they're like, this is weird. Like there's something weird going on. Even back to like Invasion of the Body Snatchers, talking about that. What did we call it? Urban alienation?
Oh, yeah.
And so, yeah, but there was just this like 80s vibe of something's kooky in the city. Ghostbusters also like capitalized on that, but to a much larger return. Heather Langenkamp auditioned for this movie.
Oh.
Was not cast.
Oh, man.
But
what'd she do instead? Anything?
Yeah, in 1984. can you imagine if you got this movie and you missed out on a fucking nightmare? What a nightmare. But it was a major influence on Joss Whedon and Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And upon two viewings of this movie, I could see it just as clear as day that the whole reason why people didn't like Buffy the Vampire Slayer when it came out was that they didn't get the irony of it. They were like, oh, that sounds stupid. And you're like, yes.
Do you mean the movie or the show?
Both.
Okay.
Even the whole concept. They're like, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, that sounds stupid. It's supposed to.
Yeah.
The concept
is... Well, the movie did well, didn't it?
It did fine, but there were a lot of haters about it because they just didn't understand that there was an irony there. They didn't understand that, yes, I know... This sounds crazy to people, but my hero is going to be, number one, be a girl.
Yeah.
Number two, it's going to be like a valley girl. And she's going to be like a cheerleader and popular and blonde. But believe it or not, those people might have some self-worth.
Yeah.
Not only might they have some worth, but they might actually have something more to offer than the people that we do automatically revere. And that maybe these people that you shit on actually have more to offer than you're giving them credit for.
Yeah.
So that's the irony. I mean, he could have called it like a strong name. Like, what's a strong female name? What, Ruth?
Yeah.
Zelda.
But I think Buffy, Buffy is the
point that's
of
the fun.
Yeah.
That's the joke is that, yes, I'm going to show
you.
You
think of a soft, rich girl who can't do anything for herself.
So that in this
yet
movie.
Yet she's slaying vampire ass.
Yes, and.
And killing them.
And fucking them. but only if they have a soul. Well, actually, no. She got with Spike before that.
Complicated.
But anyhow, so Eberhardt was really excited to be in a movie theater when they had a showing of this, and he got especially excited when he heard two 12-year-old girls behind him crying. Now, this is problematic on a couple of different levels. Number one, how did he know that they were exactly 12 unless he addressed them personally?
Right.
And why was he enjoying that they were crying? He also has this direct
quote. I know that cry from anywhere.
Yeah, just like, licking his finger and holding it up in the air like 11, no, that's a 12. A lot of 11, this is a direct quote, a lot of 11-year-old boys got their first hard on. Over the thought of being alone in the world with one or both of these babes, end quote.
I can't say he'd be lying. I mean, I could imagine myself as, you know, hitting puberty and just being like, oh, I'm alone in the world with these two.
I'm just saying, the guy might be the sweetest guy on the planet. I know that you...
Weird thing to say, though, yeah.
It is. I know that you heard in the commentary that you watched that, you know, the actresses had nothing but good things to say about him, right? But yet every single other word that comes out of his mouth is either about 11 or 12-year-olds or women alone in a city with no one around. So... Hey, they're artists.
Maybe that was it. They're like, he was just had so many good ideas and was so, you know, had such a clear vision.
He had thought about this so much. but yeah, so now we have Night of the Comet. And then, so, okay, when you first, neither one of us had seen it.
Yeah.
When you first started watching it, as not even, I don't even want your full scope of the movie starts. It's happening. You're watching Night of the Comet. What are your initial thoughts on it?
I mean, initially, it's like, you know, it has the look you expect to have. You know, it is a very just quintessential 80s, nothing interesting with the cameras going on. A lot of just kind of nice static shots. However, some of these, like, dichotomies they set up, like, because you have Sam... confront her stepmom.
Yes.
And it says something about how, you know, oh, your fucking neighbor Greg. And I forget what the stepmom's name, Susan or whatever.
Doris.
Doris smacks her. Sam smacks her back. So you're like, oh, okay. And then Doris like grabs her collar and just fucking cracks her with a fist in the mouth, sends her flying. And I was like, oh, this movie. Okay.
And this
holy
is,
shit.
This is when the stepdaughter right before that said, because the stepdaughter isn't happy with the fact that her stepmom is kind of fooling around with the neighbor, Chuck. And Chuck, she says to her mom, Doris, you were born with an asshole. You don't need Chuck. Like, what a fucking line.
It's good.
And then we get a little catfight there. But yeah, sends her flying.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're saying
I liked all the people in it. And it was weird kind of when we lost all those characters. Like, I wanted some more of... I mean, not that, like, I understand that's not the fucking movie. Like, I'm rewriting an entire movie here. But that part was at least interesting. I liked – there's so much going on there with that family, like, with the divorce – or, you know, stepmom and how she's treated, and then she's just gone. Like, at least maybe have her survive somehow so there's some sort of – you know, familial barrier or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, well, you know, once they're alone, it's just like, yeah, all right, what are two girls going to do alone?
Well,
and they go fucking shopping.
Yes, absolutely. I'm with you, girls. But I'll tell you this, you're right, though. Like, for if you catch yourself at a crossroads where you're asking yourself if Night of the Comet is a horror movie or not, they've killed fucking everyone.
Yeah,
like, they
so.
they just absolutely, like exponentially upped the kill volume.
I would have liked to have seen that maybe then.
Yeah, you're right, though. But isn't it a little eerie, though? And I'm with you. But isn't it a little eerie how they did it? Because everybody's waiting for the comet. The whole world is you know, just up in arms and excited for this thing. And then when it's presented to us with some, I would say questionable special effects, but they kind of work because they look really weird.
Yeah.
And for the time, probably pretty cool, but and still cool, but just in a sort
of
like,
I understand.
Like there's the guy churning butter like they used to in the olden days. Right. Like it. But so anyhow, but yeah, like these people just kind of look up. Doris is the last one and she just has sort of a funny expression on her face. Next thing we know, everyone is dead.
Yeah.
And now here's this very,
and there's just ash. I mean, I get it. You got a budget, but I don't know. Give me a pile of goo or something.
They used brick dust.
That looked exactly like brick dust.
And they called it calcium dust.
Yeah, you're right.
Which wouldn't you just call that like bone dust?
Well, not if you're a scientific researcher and know specifically what it is.
And would it be orange?
Well, yeah, I guess that's the problem.
But now let me ask you this, because this is something before we get into like the fun characters and the interplay and all that sort of thing. I know that you love and hate your rules, and or I should say you love your rules and you hate when they're broken.
Yeah.
Did you feel the movie did a good enough job of describing the fact that 99% of the world's population, if not more, are just instantly turned to dust, and yet some are zombies?
Yeah.
Who still speak English.
Yeah, and seem kind of intelligent. Like, they're not mindless zombies. They're, like, working.
Yeah, and they're, I mean...
Well, I guess the cops, that's a dream. We only see... So, yeah, we see two zombie cops in a dream. We see one zombie cop who attacks Larry, who is Reggie's boyfriend at the beginning.
Correct.
And then there's a zombie boy, because I think at one point they were like, oh, fuck, we forgot there are zombies in this movie. Right. We should probably have one more. But yeah, then they never, and it's never like the, because they do mention there's like, oh, there is a slow progression for some of us who didn't get a full blast or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, rule-wise, this movie's not good at all. Because, yeah, the rules, as they just figure out immediately, they're like, oh, I slept in steel, therefore I wasn't affected by it.
Yeah.
But they never really say what is affecting people. So what does sleeping in steel, that still has doors, right? Doors and windows.
Sure.
It's not like a sealed steel box. Yet the researchers are now compromised because they kept the ventilation open.
Exactly.
So obviously everyone is sleeping with ventilation, like no one's suffocating in the projection booth.
Right.
So yeah, what are the rules there? And then, yeah, then the people who are slowly degrading, are they eventually turning into zombies? Like, are there, which stages are there? They say something about the eyes. There's one guy with like no eyes.
Yeah.
But the zombies have eyes. So now it's like, is this a different form of degradation going on?
You're right. There's layers there. There's the people that instantly turn to calcium dust.
Yeah.
There are the zombies that still have cheekbones or eye socket or orbital sockets. And then you have the people that are mid-grade who actually in some ways seem to be worse off than the actual zombies
right.
themselves. And
yeah, that one guy when he takes off his glasses, like that's kind of funky. Like they are just, I mean, I know
it's creepy,
darkly lit for that. But yeah, they just look like empty vacuum
right.
where his eyes should be.
Yeah. And I mean, as they say, like deep set eyes, normally a pretty attractive quality, right. but like not
too
this
far.
Deep.
Yeah.
yeah. So it's a little strange that way. And you mentioned something about the scientists. Now, by the way, I watched this on a free version on YouTube, and it was awful because there were no subtitles. The sound mix is absolutely awful. I'll get into more of that later. to an annoying point, but let me just say that just walk this step by step with me. You have scientists who seem to know so much about this,
right.
but yet they left the vents open. So were they just scientists like looking at like other science stuff and that they're smart so that they quickly learned everything that just happened? Because you it's almost implied that they knew that this was going to happen.
Right. Yeah, because that's why they went underground.
Right. And the dumbasses left the vents open? Like,
yeah. Got to breathe, man. You know, gets hot down there, hot and stuffy.
That's academia for you. But no, I'm kidding. But
hey, listen, you can be very smart about one thing and very stupid about another.
Good point.
Yeah.
Good point. And conversely, you can be very dumb about something and very smart about something, which is where we've got.
Absolutely.
Which I guess is probably
it's very different from what I said.
Right? Because we've got our girls who do one thing in this movie and they accomplish something that gets a ting gold star from Slumber Podcast Massacre with TNA, which is that they actually built in a part of the story that these girls know how to handle weapons and
yeah.
have hand-to-hand combat training
yeah.
because their father is a Green Beret. So thank God they got the memo from
us. And that was the director, the picture of the dad. That's Tom Eberhardt.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So thank God they announced that, you know, it kind of like develops as the movie goes on, but we figure out that these girls are no strangers to guns or hand-to-hand combat. And it makes sense. So maybe they don't know science, but they do know they got the street smarts.
I also learned, I thought those were Uzis. Those are MAC-10s. I do not know the difference.
I am so glad that you said that because I'm not going to call myself a gun guy, but I like guns. I mean, I'm fascinated by them. So when I'm looking at them and they're like, Dad would have got us Uzis. I'm like, those aren't Uzis.
Right, no.
I guess they're not.
And they made some in the featurette I watched. They made some comment about how they kept like they're not as good as Uzis. Like that was part of the, they were like we wanted Uzis, and the studio or whatever was like you get MAC-10s.
Oh, that's fun.
But then they kept jamming, and I'm like, wait, are they shooting like real? Like is this
those
truth or dare? Are they shooting?
Guns. Like yeah. They knew what the fuck they were doing.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't even mean that as girls, but I mean like they really. I mean, they did seem like they knew how to kick some ass.
Yeah.
So I'm going to nitpick here for 1 second. We're introduced to Reggie. I would say that it's a co-starring role with her sister, Samantha. But we're first introduced to her. Now, I've seen this happen on stage before. Somebody in the scene has an accent. Somebody doesn't.
Uh-huh.
You might see this more in auditions. The person who, the character who doesn't have an accent starts doing the accent of the person who is supposed to have an accent.
Yeah.
When we first are introduced to her, she's working her job at the movie theater. The owner or manager of the movie theater has like a typical East Coast, like Brooklyn accent.
Yeah.
And her response is, if you listen closely, and it never really completely goes away. I don't know where that actress is from, but she's kind of doing... Like her sister Samantha is doing a Valley Girl thing to the best of her ability. But Regina is kind of like sounds kind of New Yorkish a little bit. That's just my picking it up. But it's nothing that ruins anything. It's just me being a nerd about it. But this movie does. Well,
Kelly Maroney's from Minnesota.
Okay, so that's fine. And then
Catherine Mary Stewart is from she's Canadian.
Okay, well, here's what's
Edmonton,
funny. We're Edmonton.
Alberta.
Oh, well, that ruins my theory then, because sometimes people in Ontario will have a little bit of what sounds like an East Coast accent, sometimes. But, okay, either way, it's...
Who, by the way, still looks stunning.
Yeah, she does.
Like, and no work. Doesn't look like she has, like, the fish lips and all those things.
And
truly blessed.
I recognized her from the moment she was on screen from nothing. Not to say that I didn't recognize her. I recognized her, but I couldn't figure out through hours of searching, days.
When I saw Last Starfighter, I was like, right.
Yeah, but man, oh man, I was picturing her in something else that I kept going through her filmography being like I'm going to find, yeah, that's it. That's where I know
right.
her from. I could never find it. Maybe just a familiar face.
That's how I was with Jeffrey Lewis, who played like the head doctor.
Oh,
I was
yes.
like, I know
there's
that guy.
One dude, there's that one dude that looks like him. I know exactly who you're talking
about. Well, no, but I'm like, that guy has done a ton. It's actually Juliette Lewis's dad.
Is it really?
Yeah. But yeah, I know I've seen him in several things, but then going, it's like that happens so often where you see a guy who does character work and then you're like, oh, I know that guy so well, and you've looked through 50 TV credits. And yes. You're like, I didn't even know these shows existed. Like, right. I've never seen this guy in my life.
Exactly. Yeah, God bless those character actors. And congratulations, by the way, to actors everywhere.
Oh, yeah, SAG, it's over.
Getting back to work.
It's over.
I really hope they fix the AI thing. That was the one that I was really concerned about, personally.
Yeah.
Like, I could see, like... That's a really fucking legit concern.
Oh, yeah.
So,
well, and also because AI doesn't create anything. It just copies things.
Sure.
And yeah, and already Jeffrey Katzenberg is like, yeah, don't, like, in the future, like, at least animated movies, like, 90% of that will be done by AI. And it's like, please don't.
Right.
Can we stop cutting employees out of creative things, please?
Right. Yeah.
Especially the artists themselves.
Yeah. These animators are probably not great at a lot of other things in life.
Right.
Like, but they're good at drawing, so can we let them have that thing? They might not be like world-class athletes. I'm just throwing that out there. But you know, let them draw. But we get these performances that are they kind of fit the tone of what this movie is, which is a low budget movie. But then again, the director made a good point, not about 11 or 12 year olds, but he made a good point about Terminator. And I thought that it was nice of him to say this because Terminator was such a much better film. But he's like, that was also a low budget film.
Yeah.
I don't know why he said that because it makes his film look so much worse.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, this is a low budget movie. And I think I will say this. I think for the scope of the film, which is a sprawling urban landscape, they did a good job of capturing the enormity of that.
Yeah.
And guess what? They did it without will fucking blow your mind. They did it without permits.
Yeah. They did total guerrilla, like,
yeah.
Well, let's hit this intersection because no one drives around here at 2:30 or whatever.
Right. So I think that's great. Now, one thing I want to ask, this is just a minor question. When did we stop saying make it for do it?
Dude, I know that is. I remember that being a thing.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
But it was did you make
that's
it?
That's all they'd say in this movie.
Right.
The word sex. Maybe they were trying to avoid some, I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
Can't say sex? Well, of course you could say sex.
You know what? I think you might be onto something because this was, while not the first, one of the very first PG-13 movies.
Oh, okay.
So maybe making it is more than doing it. Like making it is less than doing it.
I guess.
Yeah.
You're still allowed to say fuck once in a PG-13 movie.
Right. Fucking it. Yeah.
Guardians of the Galaxy 3 did it. It's like so out of place, but I'm sure James Gunn was like, we're using our fuck this time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You don't waste that. No. Yeah. When those rolls come to the table at the Greek diner, you eat those fucking rolls with your lemon rice soup. I don't care what you're doing with your carbs right now. You eat those rolls.
Yeah.
Same with the cheddar biscuits at Red Lobster. Anyhow, the performances are fine because if you listen to the dialogue here, let's put it this way. It's light years beyond a lot of other midnight movies and their dialogue. There is some wit to this. What was the line that you liked?
Sam says something about... And this is an example of a good line, but I think it kind of gets lost in its delivery or there's just something about the tone. But they're just kind of walking into the mall. No, maybe it's the radio station. And she goes, do you think this is happening all over, like Burbank? But even like you put a little pause in there,
yeah,
it makes that funnier. But she like I put too much of a pause in it. Like she's like, do you think this is happening all over, like Burbank?
Yeah. Which sounds like a serious question.
Right. But if it's like, do you think this is happening everywhere? Like Burbank?
Yeah. And probably maybe a little bit more of a Valley Girl accent on that. That punches it up even more. I don't know if she sells Valley Girl so much as she does. Which, by the way, if any of you are wondering what the Valley Girl accent sounds like, and I don't even understand the geography of L.A. to really even know what I'm talking about here, other than... It's supposed to sound kind of a lot more like the Californians skit on SNL, mm-hmm. where they're like really over, you know, pronouncing words and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But that's where we got like us.
Check out Frank Zappa's song Valley Girl.
Yeah, there you go.
You want a good representation.
But it was kind of a fun time for us, even in the Midwest, because before the internet, things would just filter in from the coasts.
Yeah.
And eventually get to us. And so we had words like, you know, totally tubular and stuff like that, like all this valley speak. And they work that in this movie, especially the character of Samantha.
Yeah.
She does it the most. She has a really nice scene. They're sitting on the bumper of a car, and Samantha has, because she's younger, and it's taken her a little bit longer to accept the enormity of what's happening.
Yeah.
And the finality of it. And she has... A monologue that the director, a short monologue, but the director intended for it to be funny.
Uh-huh.
But she just went all in and it turned into a really nice moment where she's, you know, in the midst of this just apocalypse, she's talking like it was just another day about the boy in school that likes her.
Yeah.
And like how he was going to ask her out and how her and how her friend, like, you know, is doing really bad in math and she's not sure how she's going to tell her parents. And it, and she like gives a really fucking nice, like, emotional reading of that. And it was meant to be ironic. Like, it was meant to be like I'm talking about, I'm like, I'm such an airhead that I'm talking about stuff that isn't relevant right now.
Right.
Because the world has ended. But she went serious with it, and it's a really nice moment.
Yeah.
And it's after that that they decide to go shopping.
Yeah.
And then we hear Cyndi Lauper, question mark?
That, yeah, they play Girls Just Want to Have Fun, and it's been a while since I heard that song. And it sounds exactly like it, but there is something with the pitch where, and it's crazy that, because, yeah, you asked me that before we even recorded, and I was like, hilarious you say that, because I had the same doubt. I mean, it's a very good good replication if it is. It might be the real one.
It might be.
I mean, it sounds so much like it, but there does. Just was something off about it.
A little bit. Yeah. Just a little bit. And, you know, here's the thing. This is what I like. I actually wrote this note down somewhere. I wrote, girls really do want to have fun.
Sarah Dooley, who does our theme song, did a version of that.
Oh, did she?
She has her own, yeah.
She would do well at that.
Yeah.
I'd like to hear that. Girls do want to have fun. I don't know if they just want to have fun, but they do want to have fun. And What I mean by that is that that's a cute thing about girls. Like, I love when they decide that they are going to have fun this night.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they when they decide that we are going out with the specific purpose of having fun, they really get after it.
Yeah.
Like, guys will just go out and then they might end up having the fun.
Yeah.
You know, but girls, like,
we don't walk in the bar like, woo!
The woo girls.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I, you know, yeah, they're a little loud, maybe a little annoying, but you know what? It'd be a darker world without the woo girls.
Sure.
So, God bless them. And
I'm going to start entering the bar like that.
Yeah.
Every with time the big now. Woo. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. No, I think that, they'll be like, well, that guy's here to have fun. we should also do that. So here's a funny thing that you might not know about this movie. Everybody out there is talking about, is Die Hard a Christmas movie or not? Is this a Christmas movie?
No. Die Hard takes place like Christmas Eve.
But we have Christmas trees. We have decoration all over the place.
It takes place in early December.
Yeah. So it's Christmas time.
It's Christmas time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the city.
But no one ever mentions it again. At least in Die Hard, he says, writes on a guy's sweatshirt, now I have a machine gun, ho, ho, ho.
Yeah, which...
There are Christmas references in Die Hard.
They could have used that line in this movie.
Yeah. It's not like everyone's at their house for a Christmas party. They're there for the Comet party.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, Chris, I don't know why this is set during Christmas, especially in L.A. Maybe that's the joke. Like, get it, guys? Like, you can't really tell it's Christmas in L.A. ever.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Another like, joke that maybe was supposed to land, but just I don't feel landed.
Now, there was a big hubbub, a hullabaloo, about Haley's Comet. You remember that? Was that 86?
Yeah, maybe. Something like that.
It was a big deal. Visually kind of disappointing, right?
Well, I mean, yeah.
Like, it wasn't like we were expecting a fireball in the sky, and it wasn't that at all.
Careful
really.
On the we.
Yeah. People that did not understand.
Yeah, you were eight, science. So I could see how maybe you were like, Comet, all I know is the cartoon depiction of what a comet looks like.
Right.
That's what I'm going to see barreling across the sky. Yeah,
it'll have a face on it.
Right. Going, woo!
Yeah. And then just disappear into the bar. That didn't happen.
It's just like a speck that you go, oh, that was in a different place than it was last night, and now it's gone.
Right. I will say this, though. I have experienced what I would consider not like a life, you know, just altering, but if you've had the good luck and good fortune of seeing like a nice, thick, voluminous meteor shower.
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, shooting stars like here in the Midwest, like we're, you know, you see one or two or three in a lifetime, and you think that the whole world is more magical now. Go out to Arizona and sit in a hot tub.
Yeah.
You don't have to, but I mean, I was in a hot tub. And I was looking up at the night sky, and it's like, just count to 20 over and over. And then there's another one and another one and another one. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But either way.
We have really bad light pollution around here, too.
Because you know what you don't get around here?
And just air pollution.
You don't get the stardust. Like, there's the here you get the stars.
Yeah.
You go out there, and you get that little dust in between the stars.
Oh, where you can actually see the Milky Way.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
That I would love.
But in this movie, the whole fucking town is all about the comet, to the point that they're selling pretty shitty grade props for $9.10, which is a lot of money in 1984 dollars, I'm guessing, for a headband, essentially. But the whole city is poured out.
Yeah.
They don't give a shit about Christmas.
No.
But they love this comet.
Yeah.
And they die.
So that's everyone.
Next week, the movie is charming enough throughout. Like I mentioned earlier about the sound mix, when I watched it on the free version on YouTube, this movie doesn't use as much instrumental score as it does actual like lyrical 3-minute pop songs.
Yeah,
but when you watch the shit ass version that I watched on YouTube, it is just put into the mix so high that it's equal or higher to the dialogue.
Damn.
So you have no idea what's going on, plus no
this
close
is royalty caption. Free, and we are going to use it.
Right, exactly. We're going to make these people stars. But yeah, it was almost unwatchable. And I got done watching that version, and I'm like, this movie sucks. I've never, ever had technology flip my opinion of a movie more than this.
Yeah.
And you just watched it on the DVD.
I just watched it this morning. I remember very little from it, unfortunately. I mean, I remember enough. There are moments I'm sure you'll have to remind me of, but
you like a nice piece of furniture?
Yeah. Was that
how about that sectional in the radio studio?
Oh yeah.
Nice, like giant ass S-shaped mm-hmm. sectional.
Yeah.
I mean, it's impressive, really, if you see it. Also, in script form, you and I were talking about this a couple weeks or maybe a week ago, that nobody in real life ever says, "You fool."
Right.
But they do if you're reading a script.
Right.
Also, no one is ever called a cretin unless it's in a script.
Yeah, also true. Yeah, I've never heard anyone use that in real life.
Yeah, fucking cretins. Like, yeah, no, they don't say it.
Even like I know this isn't a movie, I'm gonna use it. Like, people are just like, save it, you can only say it on film.
Right.
I was gonna use it as a joke.
Yeah. First of all, no one's gonna know what you're talking about. Right. They're not even gonna
especially
know that
today.
It's
yeah, yeah, they don't even do it in movies anymore.
Right. It's like
they still do, you fool.
It's like in Shakespeare when you call somebody a cur, which is like a dog.
Yeah.
But like, we don't give a shit. No. So anyhow, there is a nice segment with Samantha again, which I don't know, maybe she's sort of the dark horse of this movie. Like, she really is a pretty fun character. And I know that she's supposed to be a little bit annoying, but this actress is so kind of just down to earth looking. I'm speaking mainly about her orthodontia, but she's just so...
No, her teeth are awesome in this.
Yeah.
She's got a cute little overbite.
Like, if she had been cast in Fright Night and they would have sent her to makeup, they would have been like, no, you can just go ahead back up and run the scene. But anyhow, she has a nice segment. You mentioned the cops, the dream within a dream.
Yeah.
So she's,
well, I didn't like that.
She's like dreaming, and then you know, she's driving down the road like we would, 200 miles an hour, drinking a beer, having fun, gets pulled over by cops who were actually the cops that were assigned to the film. To kind of like watch it. So they're like, you want to be in the movie? And they were creepy as fuck.
Dude, more zombies in this movie. Why not?
Right.
I mean, maybe it's a budget thing. I don't know. But The zombies looked good. And yeah, but yeah, when half of them are in a dream, I was like, oh, come on. Because there's no other threat. I mean, I guess the researchers, but we don't even really know much about them until like the last act.
Other than they're boring as fuck.
Yeah, and that is also another problem. They are not exciting at all, except for Mary Warnock.
Samantha does strip down to like do a little sink bath, though, or like in attempts to take off all her clothes down to her underwear.
Yeah.
Before she is then met by the other cop, which is the dream within the dream. Like she has a dream, thinks she wakes up, but it's still a dream. And so my point is not a lot of sex and nudity or really none. What about Harper?
Well, Reggie bangs in the projection booth.
She makes it.
But people are probably like, what is banging? Makes it.
And I can't tell. Like, I'm hoping that what the scene.
For $15, I think. Like, yeah. I, that part I was very.
$84, though.
Oh, yeah, shit.
In 1984, yeah.
Oh, in, not, oh yeah. I was like, it was $84?
Yeah, it might have been in $84. Yeah. $15 in 1984 might have been $84.
So, she does not even seem to want to do it. Like, she seems kind of just like, well, I guess I'm here.
Yeah. And, and it's just kind of like, yeah, maybe the world was just simpler that way. I guess. Like, I'm 18 years old. The projectionist likes me. Like, I get, what am I? I'm not going to fuck the projectionist. Right. But then, now, the love, the intensity of the lovemaking, I'd like to think that when the scene opens up, that maybe they've already had a big finish. And now this is just the cuddling afterward, because what we see is less than stellar.
Well, I mean, as far as it feels like it's post.
Okay. All right. Then
he
that's
does
fine.
Do like a, I don't know what he's doing either
he's
behind
sort of
her.
On like what's getting a little.
Because he like gets like down under the covers, but it's like still with the position of his body. I'm like, his face is like in the middle of her back.
Right.
I don't know what he's doing.
So yeah, at best, like, yeah. Cause I mean, just maybe like a. Playing with her butt a
Yeah. But she does, at the end of the scene go, woohoo, yeah. Larry!
Right, yeah. That's how I'm going to do it, when I'm going to walk behind you when we go into the bar, and I'm just going to tickle your butthole right where you walk through. There you go. So, you mentioned Mary Warnoff. We remember her from Chopping Mall.
Yeah.
Eating Raoul.
Yeah, but we didn't do that one.
We haven't, but I mean, it's she was just...
Terror Vision.
Yes. And she's just, she was a Warhol girl and just kind of like waltzed into quirky filmmaking.
Yeah.
And
a lot of Corman stuff, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she's great in this. Like, she's the voice of reason. Well, first of all, she's one of the scientists that actually acts like a human being. Right, right. And maybe, I don't know, maybe that was the director's vision that it just didn't translate. But she comes across as concerned and likable. And she, I don't know, like, it's like Mary just woke up that day and she's like, I'm going to put everything I fucking got into this character. Right. And like, this is like really meaningful. But it's nice to see.
Yeah. Not to say that she brings a lot of energy to the role. That is kind of the funny thing is she is maybe the least, I don't even want to say energetic, but emphatic maybe researcher, but definitely the most engaging.
When you're in science and you work in a confined space, you're like in a perpetual state of tiredness.
Yeah.
Whether you're like on a spaceship or whatever, like you're never like, nobody ever just like pops out of bed, like feeling great, you know, walking into the room doing the like air guns or whatever, you know, everybody's just a little grizzled, but she at least comes across as sincere, which is nice. Then we do get, you know, it's a little regrettable in this day and age, but we got that three-lettered F word flying because it's the 80s.
Yeah.
And
but, a slight gay slur, but used as a, you know, she's not using it as
kind of a compliment.
Listen, in the 80s, you know, there's a lot of rhetoric that was going around and a lot of people in power that didn't really like that kind of thing. So it was a. You know, maligned thing. So, I mean, kudos to the movie where she's not, you know, she's talking about the realistic situation that could be, because yes, this is after they meet Hector and she's like, what if, you know, that guy could be gay, then where are you going to be,
right?
And yeah, just kind of throws out a casual F word there. Yeah. But
isn't that funny though? I never hated in my life. I've never hated gay people. But at the same time, I grew up in the 80s. So here I am not hating gay people in any way, shape or form. But hearing that word and being like, it's a movie. Right. And people just say it like it was like ne'er the twain shall meet. Like it had hearing that word had nothing to do with what my thoughts or feelings right. were on gay people.
Yeah.
It was just, I guess that's just.
I mean, it was, you know, any kid would use it right. as if you're fighting with someone.
Sure.
It was never in an argument, never a pleasant thing to call someone.
Right.
Yeah. That was never the intention.
Yes. But we've
come a long way.
Yeah, we have. We really have. So there's one slightly problematic section of this film that I think could have been fine, but I think they over stylized it, which is the mall shootout.
Okay.
We have three former stock boys who now would, in their words, own the store.
Yeah.
But not only are they beginning to deteriorate with the disease, but they're also just getting weirder along with it.
Yeah.
Like more demented. Like, is it?
Were they weird before?
Right.
Though?
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
I mean, I said stock boys just because I read that in the Wikipedia synopsis. Is that determined that they are stock boys?
Yeah. They said like last week we were stock boys.
Oh, now we own okay. Yeah. Okay. Okay.
But they're
but they're kind of cool. Like that guy is cool. Like he's
kind of new wave,
an interesting like, villain. Yeah.
Yeah. He's kind of like if like the lead singer of the Cars like got a disease and then
Rick O'Casey.
Yeah. Rick O'Casey. Yeah. But yeah, he's got a presence. It's a little over stylized because it's like, why does getting the disease or the exposure make you like homicidal? Like, was he that way before?
Right.
You know?
Yeah, because they were just like, we got to kill these girls, man.
Right. Right.
Why?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Like, we didn't used to do that when we were just stock boys. Right. Like, but yeah, so that it's a little quirky. There's some fun there, though, in the shootout. It's some action.
They kind of have a gang hierarchy already, too, where he's like, get her. I'd be like, you work for me, dude. I was your boss.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You work till 3. I come in at 3. Like, why are you better than I am? Right. But yeah, it's a little quirky, but if nothing else, it does add some action and there's a little shoot 'em up stuff. There is a great line actually in that where Reggie, probably with her father's instruction, has captured a hostage of the bad guys, of the bad stock boys. And so she approaches in order to get her sister back, the other bad guys with the gun to the head of the hostage that she has, which is one of the other bad guys. And then the bad guy shoots his own friend, his own ally, part of his gang. And he has the great line where he just says, I'm not crazy. I just don't give a fuck.
Oh, there was the fuck. Okay, yeah, they used their fuck there.
There it is. There yes, it is. That's okay. It. Yeah, and well used.
Yeah, like good,
it, yeah, it's a pretty badass line. So yeah, there's a little action there. Now, the transition of we have a little bit of a character arc from actor, which I'm so glad that you mentioned this. That this movie does break a little ground. And the fact that we do have female protagonists, and we have a Latino male lead in 1984.
Robert Beltran.
Yeah.
And, who would go on to be in Star Trek Voyager, little tidbit here, a little fun little link. That's kind of where it was probably his biggest project he ever did, Star Trek Voyager. Yet right before he is introduced, they're in the radio station, and Sam says, beam me up, Scotty. And then a guy who's eventually going to be on Star Trek appears. It's amazing.
Like he just came in for the casting and they're like, aren't you already on this show? Like, I thought I've seen you in an episode.
That's what he did at his Voyager audition. He just slid them a copy of Night of the Comet. And he's like, go to about minute 18.
Yeah. I call this destiny. but yeah, so he's in it, and he's really cool because he's like not a super – well, I guess this is what's cool about him is that he's not really in anything. Like,
he's not a type. Caricature of what you might expect.
Right. And if anything, he's kind of mocking by the end of it sort of like a southern white stereotype.
You know, right.
Like a cowboy type thing. And it all just sort of works. It's a little quirky, but it works. And I'm going to run to the bathroom real quick. How long have we gone? Yeah, I know. So trying. Yeah. But let me just say, by the time we get to the lab, the underground layer, where the scientists are, where now they've decided to like use blood from innocent people who have survived to make a serum. Do you think that the movie loses, keeps momentum? I know that you've had some issues with the fact that you think that this movie is lacking in plot overall.
Yeah.
So do you like that part? Do you not like that part? Do you think it fit or not?
I mean, I don't think it fit. I didn't like that. I know that, you know, what is that? We're going to make a serum from the blood. It's not like the people were immune to it. They just avoided it. Like, if anything, the serum is get in a steel box. So yeah, it did just feel like we need some sort of villain. Again, this is one of those movies where people are like, oh, no, you're missing all the hilarious comedy in it. It's a comedy. All these are jokes, which just feels like a way to excuse away some of your poor choices when you made the movie. So yeah, like, I mean, I like the idea, you know, you can have, you know, this corporate research facility be full of, you know, unethical bad guys. I'm fine with that. The idea of making a serum out of the blood is dumb. You know, workshop that around. Come up with something better than that. Because I don't know if you heard my point, but yeah. They're not like immune to it. They just avoided it. So there's nothing in their blood that would make that like that would reverse the process.
Oh,
right?
Oh, you're right.
Right. So it's dumb.
God, you're right.
Yeah. So, but you know, I don't dislike the idea of these guys are slowly degrading while they're, you know, doing whatever they do. I mean, there is kind of one part where they're trying to strap these people in and they're getting dumb and they're like, I don't really remember what I'm doing right now, you know?
Right.
Or just like misspelling words and things like that. It was a nice little touch.
Yeah, a little bit.
But it's, I don't know. It just didn't feel like big enough for a, you know, the end of the world type of movie.
Yeah, better used in the second half of Flowers for Algernon, where he's losing his intelligence. Right. But used to a greater effect. But no, you're, God dang it, you're absolutely right about that blood thing. And it would have been a perfect place for Regina to be like, you idiots. Like, right. It's just steel. You know that you got exposed because you left the vents open. So what makes you think that these people are going to make you better?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Unless the only thing you could say is that if a serum did have to be created at a molecular level involving blood, that had to be the, what would you say, like the petri dish of creation, is that we need human blood to test different ideas. But you're right that they put it across as, what do these survivors have that we don't have?
Right.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
I get it. Luck. If you just need blood to fuck around with to figure it out.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's not really.
If anything, you take the blood of the infected, figure out what's doing it and try and reverse that.
Right. And then maybe you don't kill some kids. Right. Yeah, we've got a couple of kids in the movie that happened to survive. And so, yeah, that's.
Where do the kids come from? I might have missed that.
How they picked up the fact that the kids existed at all.
Yeah.
Like where? From where?
Okay. Yeah. All right.
I'm going to
say I watched it without a phone out or anything, but I did zone out a couple times.
That's fine. I literally took a 20-minute nap break on the second time around.
Yeah. Nancy kept going, are you tired? I'm like, no, I'm fine. Yeah. She's like, you look like you need a nap.
I paused it in the 45 minutes of Regina riding a motorcycle to take my nap, and then I came back to another 25 minutes of it. But, now here's where we take a little bit of a quirky turn as we approach the end of this movie.
Yeah.
So I like it from a conceptual concept that once you get past the evil, like the scientists have been defeated, now it's just us back to square one,
yeah,
which is, well, what do we do now? And Hector and Regina have decided to, like, create a family.
Yeah.
Of something resembling husband and wife and son and daughter.
Pretty progressive for 1984. What a multicultural family.
Right.
You have, Mexican dad, Asian daughter.
Right.
And then some white people.
But why does Regina, change into, frontiers?
Dude, that dress she wears, it is all the way up. Yeah, it is, the full front all the way up with the tight collar around the long sleeves.
Yeah, I get. I know that you're new to being.
But we're gonna
a mom.
Live in L.A. Like, if you're gonna wear that, you cannot live in L.A.
Right? Yeah. No. Exactly. maybe she's like, I'm just gonna wear this, and nobody's gonna say shit about it. Right. But yeah, so they kind of he has a suit on, she has that. I think what they're trying to do is to paint the picture of the nuclear family.
Absolutely.
So you make an excellent point, though, that they kind of joke around with the idea of we are the ones to set the parameters and the limits and the expectations of what will be society, like what will be, civilization.
Yeah.
And the most important thing to them is the obeying of traffic signals, right. Apparently, because the sister Samantha is on the other side of the street. She's like, why don't you guys, what are you doing over there? Just cross the street. Nobody's coming. And they're like, no, they wait against the light. Is that what they say?
It's a cross against the light.
Yeah. We don't cross against the light.
Yeah.
Which sounds so much more powerful than just don't walk, right. But okay. And, but then what point did you make about the fact that they were so concerned?
Well, yeah. So, yeah. Because the way that whole segment plays out is, Sam's like, just come. We're in the middle of an empty city.
Right.
And so she comes out in the middle of the street proclaiming this. And then sure enough.
By the way, we're all waiting for her to get hit by a truck in that scene.
Oh, I was totally waiting. Totally waiting. That would have been too funny.
Yeah.
But then a car does come zipping around the corner. And almost hits her and stops, and they're all like, see? And she gets in the car. I'm going to get to this guy in a second. The worst payoff in movie history, by the way. They leave, right? And so now, Sam, who through the movie has been like to her sister, you always take every guy I like, but it's because you're beautiful and you're tall, and when you're in your 60s, you're going to look better than you do now. So find that just a little nice little cap. Sam's found a guy. They've got a lot in common. They're both a little quirky and weird. And they drive off. And then as the credits roll, because the boy has something with a football. He wants a football or whatever. So he's got a football. So now as the credits roll, our family just wanders out into the street and starts playing catch with this football.
Yes.
I'm like, you just not 5 seconds ago made a point about not breaking that rule. And then almost saw someone get hit by a car.
Yeah.
And then you were like, but that was dumb.
Yeah. And the kid could be like, what the fuck with the traffic light, Ma? Right. We're throwing it like we're playing a game in the middle of the street now.
Parents are very inconsistent.
Which one do you want? This is why you don't homeschool your kids.
Okay. If we can get – just if I can talk about – I'm trying to find his real name. Danny Mason Keener.
Yeah.
So I guess I should set up at the beginning of the movie. Here's another thing where I was like, this is interesting. Okay. Interesting thing for this character. They set these two girls up with their characters, I think, pretty well. Mm. With the punching, with Sam being like bold enough to stand up to her stepmom, smack her stepmom, and then take a punch like a champ.
Yeah.
And then Reggie, who is, you know, older, but she is playing Tempest. She is into it. And she goes to put her name in like she always does. And then she's like, oh, who the fuck is DMK? Why does he have the sixth high score on here? And the, you know, the guy who runs the place, who is the uncle from UHF, is like, I don't know. So then that's like kind of never mentioned. The next morning when Larry leaves and dies or whatever, but goes to get the film back from the guy he lent it to, she like uses that time to play Tempest four more times and knock DMK's high score out. Cause that's her thing. She's like, all of these scores are mine.
Yeah.
And then that is forgotten.
Yes.
Until the very end. We meet a guy. His name, he pulls up. Sam's like, what's your name? He says, Danny Mason Keener. Nothing particularly interesting about that, or, you know, no revelation. And then as he drives away, we see his license plate with his initials, DMK. Reggie doesn't see it. Reggie doesn't respond to it. It just kind of a, it's a thing where you go, remember that?
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, I remember.
Yeah. It, yeah. Of all the
like if he had been like, let's go play video games, then I would have been like, oh, okay. That's that guy's thing.
Yeah. It would have been. Yeah. Of all the like abandoned, like intersections because of a post-apocalyptic event, you walked into mine like that. Like, that's what we're waiting for. We want her to do the Leonardo DiCaprio point at the license plate. We want, that would have been a fun bit.
Yeah.
Like, that would have been like her like shaking her fist and running after the car or whatever. Yeah, that would have been fun. But it's the only thing that's kind of cool about that scene is that he delivers the line so nonchalantly. Like, he, DMK pulls up. Samantha's excited, like, oh my God, there's another man on this planet. They start talking a little bit. And she's like, I like your car. And he's like, yeah, I have 23 of them.
Right. You want to ride them? Yeah.
Right. Which is like exactly what you would have at that point. Right. Like, yeah, I have a lot of these.
I'm planning on getting 20 more today.
Right, exactly. Yeah, however many you want. Right.
As many keys as we can find.
Right. So I guess it's a cute.
I mean, maybe even just a something dumb, but where that guy shows up sooner and they have to play Tempest to break into a computer or something.
Yeah.
And he steps up and does it, you know, and then she like puts two and two together like, oh, my God, you're DMK.
Right.
You know, like, I kind of get it. It's like, oh, her rival is now with her sister, but no one knows it.
Yeah, or they cut back to the movie theater, and you just see some hands on the video game, and then, like, typing in the letters, and it's BTK. I mean,
whatever. I'm still alive.
Right. Whatever you want to do. But, yeah, it is a weird bring back around with no payoff.
Oh, the worst. I was like,
very strange.
Because, yeah, A, you're reminded. Because it is kind of, you're like, who? That is kind of mysterious. I've been that where I've, you know, have a high score on like a pinball machine. Oh. And then you come in, you're like, whose ass?
Yeah, I hate
that.
Yeah.
Whoever does that, get the fuck out of here.
Right.
But, yeah, and you're like, oh, who the fuck is this? Now I got to fucking beat this guy's high score?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's fun. But, yeah, to have it just, again, it was like, oh, this guy's DMK.
Yeah, right. We need.
But I don't think it was that. I think it was planned. Like, I don't think this was some rushed idea. Like,
right.
That was the bit.
Yeah.
It's bad. The worst payoff in movies ever.
It really is. I'm with you on that. Let's get down to brass tacks here. Have you ever played Tempest?
Oh, yeah.
I can't figure out I have not. From watching it, I can't understand what the gameplay is based on.
It's like, it was like, oh, we can do like 3D things, right? So it's almost like you're looking down a tunnel, essentially.
Okay.
But it has a lot of geometric corners on it. And then your ship, you have just like a knob that you spin, and your ship goes around. You've probably played it before.
Oh, I've seen. Yeah,
and it goes around, and there things are coming up the sides toward you, and you just have to shoot them before they get up out of the hole. Like, you're spinning around the top of this geometric hole.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's a fun game.
Yeah. Tempest.
Yeah, it was one of those where they're like, you don't have to do a joystick. Like, we've got a new kind of controller knob on here.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
But yeah, a little bit of a, like, I mean, yeah, between the you know, the Amish dress and the playing the football in the middle of the street and then DMK showing up with really no consequence whatsoever. It's a very strange ending.
Yeah.
But a happy one, I suppose.
I guess, yeah.
I mean, as happy as...
I would assume all the zombies are dead by now.
Yeah, because they said by in 36 hours, all everyone will be dead. Oh, that's right. Okay. Everyone that's infected even just a little bit will be gone. So, yeah, it's just... Just
yeah, what were you going to create a serum and spread it out to the other people you don't know exist in 36 hours?
Well, they were just going to take it for themselves.
Oh, okay.
If they could cure themselves.
Oh, okay. All
yeah.
Right.
All right. But either way, yeah, it's...
So not as benevolent as I was expecting.
Right. So, yeah, I guess when after all is said and done, when I got to the end of it, I'm like, this is just one of those quirky... I'm going to go into a point here real quick. That I've been thinking about all week. I bitch a lot about how disconnected like the younger generation is. And when I watched this movie, I thought about like what a joyous gift the 1980s were. We've talked about this before.
Yeah.
Like a decade centered on fun. And then I'm like, man, wouldn't it be great? I'm thinking to myself, wouldn't it be great if everybody just fucking turned off, like just a new age, like tune in, turn out, drop out concept, and it's just like we're just gonna get back to having fun like we did in the 80s.
Yeah.
But then it dawned on me that maybe this younger generation that I malign so heavily for like just throwing on their headsets and playing video games, maybe they are creating their own fucking 1980s by doing what they're doing.
Yeah.
And maybe they're saying like, yeah, there's a lot of shit out there. Everywhere I turn when I turn on the internet or whatever is horrible news about everything. And you might talk shit about me because I play video games all the time. But guess what? I'm having a lot of fucking fun.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that. And I ate my hat and I'm like, maybe these kids, maybe these younger people, doesn't matter what age they are, that are choosing fun in whatever venue it might be. It's not my place to judge if you're just having a good time.
Yeah. Yeah. And what, you know, what was fun to us is not fun now.
Yeah.
I've gone back to play like old Nintendo games that I, you know, original games. And I'm like, these suck ass and they're impossible. I don't know how I was good at any of them, but they are like Tempest now. Like that's a shitty app on your phone that you play for 10 minutes on the bus. Like that's that. But for a while it was like, this is groundbreaking. I've never seen anything like this. I'm going to spend my life playing this. Right. You know?
I guess what I'm saying is that I'm kind of not seeing the whole picture when I say that, you know, kids these days are just complaining about this, that, and the other. No, a lot of times they're watching TikTok videos and laughing their asses off and playing video games and having a good time.
Yeah.
And they are, maybe it's not quite the same as the 1980s where it sort of felt like an energy that was going through like all of society or at least American society at that time. People are still finding a way to have a good time and
yeah.
have fun. And who am I to decry that or whatever? So I don't know. That's just, this movie just got me thinking about it. Like what a fun, quirky ass decade that the 1980s were, where it seemed like aside from, I'm not belittling it, AIDS.
Sure.
But like aside
from, I've been thinking it the whole time. I'm glad you said it.
There are other things going on, but I'm just saying it was also a really strong commitment to fun for a decade. As strong as a national commitment to fun can be, were the 1980s. And maybe just people are creating their
cocaine
own
does that.
What's that?
Cocaine does that. It does.
Yeah. Feels good for what I've read.
Speaking of cocaine, I saw a funny Charlie Day, who's on It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
So Danny DeVito's on that show, and I saw him on some interview, and he's like, yeah, one of my favorite stories Danny told me is they went to a party in the 80s once, and it was a cocaine party, and you walked in, and they had your name written out in cocaine on the table. And he's like, and then Danny looks over and Schwarzenegger's over there going, Danny, look at my name. It's so long. Like, he was so excited about how long his name was. That's so good.
Oh, yeah. Those are good times.
Yeah, good times. I'm sure they're fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
the heroin of the 90s brought us back down.
Right. Yeah, that's right. Well, man. I encourage everybody to go out there and get their metaphorical Schwarzenegger cocaine spelling and find it for yourself and enjoy life.
Do you recommend this movie?
That's a great question.
You weren't prepared for this.
No, I literally forgot about this part. I will for what I think that it is. I think that it's, I don't know if it's trying to be anything more than a goofy, quirky, campy midnight movie. And for that, it succeeds. So yeah, I'll recommend it.
Yeah. I wouldn't. I think there are better versions of what this movie's trying to do. Sure. I think Terror Vision's better than this. Wow. I'm not going to say better. But I would rather watch Terror Vision
that
again.
That is bold coming from you. That's great.
Because at least, I mean, they were doing some stuff with lights in this movie. I'll give them that. Like, there were some artistic choices that I think paid off.
Well, dude, like, if I know that what I'm about to say is going to sound unfair because it's like feels like it's in a completely different category. But just 2 years later, if you want to talk about something that is like normal suburban life, but there is a sort of sci-fi element to it. Fucking Weird Science, dude.
Yeah.
Fucking mops the floor with this movie.
Well, yeah.
And I know it doesn't even seem like the same thing, but you're right. If you want to go kooky, quirky, little bit of a sci-fi, but in modern day setting, whether it be city or suburb, like, yeah, there are other movies that do it better.
Yeah.
You're right.
Do you still recommend it?
Well, 90% of the fucking world
They do.
Just hop on the bandwagon.
Fucking contrarians. What? No one likes this movie? Well, I'm going to like it.
Yeah, actually.
Actually, it's amazing. It's a masterpiece.
Yes.
Actually, too smart for you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Enjoy your synecdoche, New York.
Right. Or whatever other movie I'm not going to see. Like, I didn't see this one. That's about that. We don't have to fight. We don't have, like, this is a do not resuscitate. Like, it's fine. It's at the end of its run.
I feel bad, though, when it's like a request and we've
had some fun with it.
Well, we had
a good time with it. And,
They can't all be marathons.
No. And, you know, this is, and I don't even think that anybody involved with this movie would want it talked about in the same conversation of a Spartacus or whatever other like major film that you can think of. That's just the first one that comes to mind for Tom Eberhardt,
Spartacus.
Yeah, right.
I love so far. We've got John Hughes, Kubrick, and Tom Eberhardt.
Yes. He does it with the H. But no, I think it's...
Is that English? Is he British? Or is that a...
I think that's just a pretentious thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. They're like, my name is... Thomas is spelled with an H, and you can't have all my letters.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he's from L.A., so...
Yeah. So, no...
Still alive.
I'm
scabbing. Really, he's a scab.
I hope he listens. Yeah, he was one of those dudes. Wasn't that he was part of the writers' union, but he's under a certain clause.
Yeah, it's called financial core or something like that. Yeah, he gets all the benefits of it, but doesn't have to do anything to earn it. Yeah, it's a good deal. You know,
we can do that. But no, thank God they've got all that stuff figured out now, and I'm sure there'll never be another issue again.
No. Not for 15 years.
Yeah. So, no.
We don't give a shit by then.
This is, you know, not every movie has to mean the world.
No.
And not every movie has to change your life. You come home, you're a little high. you're a little drunk. You flip on the TV, if you still watch network TV, and this movie is on, hey, you might have a little fun with it.
Yeah. Or this is a good one to take a nap to.
Well, I've proven that point. That, yes, it actually is. It might be both. But
another effect of the comet, they don't tell you. Just right. Uncontrollable fatigue.
Yes. But no, I had... I enjoyed my time with it. I thought it was fun. I thought it was quirky. I thought it was charming in its timeliness of, yeah, of what it represents. It's a nice little what do I want to say, time capsule for 1984. Although there are a whole lot more.
Yeah, it's bad. Yeah, you did not think that sentence out until you got to the end.
Yeah,
yeah. This is buried at the bottom of the time capsule. The right. Crowd has dispersed. Everyone's like, this is taking so long to open. But we got Night of the Comet.
Well, it's like my in my high school reunion, 30 years, like, we opened up this time capsule that had been sealed away. And it was, like, kind of anticlimactic because it was, like, there was, like, a CD in there. Right. And we're like, well, that's
You guys remember Pearl Jam?
Right, yeah. It literally was a Pearl Jam CD.
Of course it was.
And it was, like... Yeah, that's just not. I mean, maybe give it another 30 years. Like,
although when you graduated, was that Versus?
No, it was 10.
Oh, it was 10. All yeah. right, all right.
But yeah, we were kind of like, yeah, it seems.
Oh yeah, I guess Versus came out when I was a senior. You would have been already gone.
Yeah, and it was, and that was our. I think Alive was our class song.
Oh, dude, I don't even know. Like, literally. I mean, I obviously don't remember what it was, but when I heard it, I was like, who the fuck picked this song? I've never, like, no one had heard that song.
Well.
But our class president was kind of, she was nice.
Yeah.
Well, we had two class presidents, actually. It was fucked up.
Only two class presidents?
Only?
Is that what you said?
Well, I said, well, we had two class.
Oh, you had two.
We had co-class presidents.
Yeah.
Because there was... There was some drama with the voting.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That I don't remember. Yeah, I don't remember a lot of specifics. I just remember going, yeah, really, both got the exact same amount of votes? Interesting.
Anything can
That's
happen.
Only because they didn't let me run. Thank God. I would have been a terrible class president, but I just wanted it for the title.
All
but they were like, you were in student council and never showed up. You cannot.
Right, no.
But that was only because I got into student council as like a alternate or whatever.
Oh.
And I went to my first one and I'm like, I don't know what's going on here. Like, no one ever told me what happens
there's
there.
There's probably some policy and procedure.
Yeah, there was some talking, but I was like, do I get involved in this? I was, you know, just kind of observed. And then no one ever really told me anything about it. So I was like, maybe this isn't for me. So I just stopped going. And well, then I couldn't be class president, which is way better for our class. I would have been terrible. But they both told me, they were like, you would have kicked our ass. I doubt that.
All kinds I of doubt cr- that. Crazy things can happen in an election.
True.
But yeah.
Some real things, some made up.
Yes, I know I could count on you for that. If you I don't want to say like, watch this movie, don't watch this movie, I don't give a shit. I don't want to say that. I'm just saying that if you like, if you watch Terror Vision and when we covered it and you liked it, you might like this movie.
Yeah,
as well.
You could get through this.
Yeah.
You'll be like, not as good as Terror Vision, but.
I can't believe those words are coming
Me
out.
Me neither.
Of
I
mouth.
Didn't. This is my thing. I'm like, I didn't expect this.
Yeah, God. You go over there with your burning TV. Yeah.
Well, I'll give it a shot.
Yeah. Right. So, what do we got coming up?
All right. Yeah. That was so, yeah. All right. John, thank you so much. That was Night of the Comet. He's been requesting it forever. He was very excited we did it.
Yeah.
Thank you for requesting it. We'll do, you know, give us another one. We'll do a better job on it. Yeah. Give us a better movie. It would be great. So yeah, Night of the Comet from 1984. Please join us next week as the N-word continues. I know I said I wouldn't do this. I was like, we're done with these. But I was wrong in retrospect. Please join us next week for the Rennie Harlan directed Nightmare on Elm Street Part 4, The Dream Master? Master.
Yes.
Yeah.
Correct.
So, yeah, I said we were done with the sequels, and we're not. I kind of want to say we are now after this, but... There's a part of me, I don't know, like five I don't dig, but six is so dumb that would be fun to cover.
Sure. When we get just real pissed off.
3D shit, like...
You know what we'll do? We'll wait till like springtime where you get like 14 days in a row of just gray, like no sunshine, just shitty ass. Everybody's pissed off.
Yeah.
We'll wait for that.
All right.
But yeah, part four, a beloved not only by us, but I know that Kate in Australia, huge fan of part four. I believe Frickenstein is a big part four guy too. So some of our fans from other lands, enjoy that movie a lot. And I did give it a second chance recently in the last couple of months, and I'm eating my hat yet again, eating my fedora, and a little
tastes like chocolate, yeah. Bitch.
Right. But I think it's actually kind of a wonderful movie, and I can't wait to cover it.
All right. Yeah, I can't wait either. I know in retrospect, as I started thinking about all the things that happened in it, yeah, I was like, oh, right, that is all the dumb stuff's in five. And six. And Freddy versus Jason.
Yes.
And the remake. Check out our website, slumberpodcastmaster.com. Check out, shoot us an email, slumberpodcast@gmail.com. Check out our fucking social media, all that stuff. Huge thanks to our patrons. You help make this show possible. Thank you so much. We really appreciate it. Tim, join us next week for Nightmare on Elm Street Part 4, The Dream Master. Tim, do you got anything else to say about the Night of the Comet?
Just, it's Saturday. Where are all the kids?
Woo! Bye. Yeah, I don't remember that line.
It's okay.